Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here on this really beautiful fall-like morning, although we're not quite there yet. And a special welcome to our seminar participants from yesterday. Let me say a little bit about Atesho and what that is. Atesho is not a talk or an informational lecture in the usual sense. It's an attempt by the teacher or whoever is giving it to express the Dharma as directly as possible in words. So in listening to Atesho, just become one with the listening. Don't try to analyze or judge or to remember a particular phrase. Let it flow through you with an open mind and an open heart. And, of course, if you may change your posture, shift your posture if need be during the Atesho, but however you sit, do keep the back straight and the head up. We're getting a little feedback here. When we first hear of Zen Buddhism, what are the thoughts that come up? Thoughts of enlightenment? Something mysterious? A strange esoteric practice from a foreign country? Or maybe the crazy New Age nonsense from the 1960s and 70s. I hope that those of you who were at the seminar yesterday saw that Zen practice is a plain, down-to-earth, eminently doable practice of exploring the nature of the self, the nature of this myself, and the nature of all things. Zen is a practice, something that you do for yourself and for others. And through that practice, to recognize the truth of things by direct experience, not by words, lectures, or books, and to come forth from that experience for the benefit of all beings. So while we have a few seminars like this one, like the one yesterday, and the occasional talk and discussion during an evening sitting, and yes, blatherings from the teachers like this one, we spend most of our time by far in just doing. That just doing includes sitting, walking, working, taking care of children, taking the dog to the vet, all the stuff of our daily lives is all zazen. This morning we'll look at a koan. one from the Shoyoroku, the Book of Serenity. It's the third collection of classical koans that we work on in our koan curriculum here. This is case number 12. And the case reads, Ditsang asked Xushan, "Where have you come from?" Xushan said, "From the south." Ditsang said, "How is Buddhism in the south these days?" Xushan said, "It is widely discussed." Ditsang said, "Planting my rice field and growing rice is better than that." Xushan said, "How can you save the beings of the three worlds in that way?" Ditsang said, "What do you call the three worlds?" The three worlds are realms of consciousness, variously defined as past, present, and future, or alternatively, desire, form, and no form. For now, we can think of them as the world of our experience in time, space, and karma. So here we have a conversation, a mundo, between Ditzong and his disciple and eventual Dharma heir, Xushan. This is characteristic of cases in the Shoyoroku. The exchanges are not so much the win-lose confrontations that we often see in the Blue Cliff record. Ditzong's dates are 867 to 928 of the Common Era, which puts him at the time of the final collapse of the Tang Dynasty in ancient China. As we can gather from this case, Ditzong had little use for extended discussions. Here's an excerpt from one of his diatribes that he gave before the assembly. If you want to come face to face with the essential mystery of our order, here it is. There's no other special thing. If it is something else, then bring it forth and let's see it. If you can't show it, then forget about it. You come here and use words like tranquility, reality, perfection, or constancy. What is this that you call tranquil or real? What is it that is perfect or constant? Let's be open about it. You've stored up a bunch of sounds, forms, names, and words inside your minds. You prattle that I can do this, or I'm good at figuring out that. But actually, what can you do? What can you figure out? All that you're remembering and holding on to is just sounds and forms. The wind blows, and the pine makes a sound. A frog or a duck makes a sound. Why don't you go and listen to those things and figure them out? Because these sounds penetrate your ears, and these forms pierce your eyes. You are overwhelmed by conditions. You are killed by delusion. There's not room inside of you for all of these sounds and forms. Perfection, constancy, tranquility, reality. Who talks like this? Normal people in the village don't talk like this. It's just some old sages that talk this way, and a few of their wicked disciples that spread it around. You gotta love this guy. His Dharma heir, Xushan, who died in 954. Here's one of his exchanges with a monk. A monk asked, "How can you get out of the three realms?" Xushan said, "When the three realms become one, then you can escape them." The monk said, "If not the three realms, what is it?" Xushan said, "Where is a place that is not of the three realms?" A worthy successor of his teacher. So, Ditzong asked Xushan, "Where have you come from?" That's one of those questions that a monk or a teacher will ask as an opening gambit. Where have you come from? Where are you in this world of coming and going? Life and death. Show me, where is your mind at this moment? And Xushan says, "From the south." A rather non-committal answer. Now, Xushan could have answered any number of ways. He could have made some sort of profound Zenny statement. Where am I not that I could come from anywhere? That kind of thing. But he doesn't. He's a long-time student and disciple of the master. And I suspect that he's just playing along. Let's see where the old man's headed. So Ditsong goes on. How is Buddhism in the South these days? Okay, pal. You say you're from the South. Tell me about it. Show some life here. But Shushan will not be drawn. It is widely discussed. Another no comment. Widely discussed. Talked about. Speculated upon. In the light of what was said by Ditsong, did Shushan put his foot in it? Or is he still just playing the straight man? And Ditsong goes, "Phooey. Planting my rice field and growing rice is better than that." Planting rice. For this story, we have to understand something about rice in Asia. In Asia, rice is not just a dietary staple. Here in the West, we think of bread as the staff of life. To break bread together is a sacrament of gratitude for our food and for companionship. The same is true of rice in Asia. It's a continuous reminder of the bounty of the earth that holds all people together. In a Taisho, Philip Kapler Roshi once spoke about the time he was studying in Japan. He was asked to give a talk about what it was like being an American in Japan. He had nothing prepared to say, so he extemporized about his experience with rice. In America, rice was rice, and he never liked it much. But living in Japan, he learned to appreciate rice in all its varieties and taste and texture, and to see the deep significance it had in the lives of people. As he was speaking, he saw that some in the audience were moved to tears. Here at last was an American who truly saw what rice meant to them. Planting my rice field and growing rice is better than that. Yes, better than all the words and discussions. How do you plant a rice field? The method hasn't changed in 5,000 years. You plow the field, then you flood it, then you wade into the water. You take a seedling from your little basket and push it into the mud. Take one step, repeat over and over and over. Stoop labor of the most difficult kind. There's only that one step, that one plant. The water, the sky, the wind and the clouds, just this one. Can we, or do we even want to live our lives that way? Just this one. Just this moment. Planting rice, walking, sitting zazen, all have been done for thousands of years, all in the same way. And we sit and cross our legs, straighten the spine, place our hands in the Zazen Mudra. We are joining Buddhas and ancestors in Zazen. And what about planting rice? What about planting our practice? In chapter 6 of the Diamond Sutra, Subhuti asked the Buddha, "Bhagavan, will there be any beings in the last 500 years of the Dharma ending age who will develop an understanding and belief in the truth of what is spoken here. The Buddha said, "Subuddhi, do not talk that way. In the last 500 years after the Tathagata's Parinirvana, there will be those who will observe the precepts and practice good dharmas. They will develop an understanding and belief in the truth of what is spoken here. You should know that such people will have planted roots of merit not only with 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 Buddhas, but with countless tens and hundreds of thousands of Buddhas. They will gain pure belief and clarity of mind upon hearing the words of this sutra, even for a moment." In every moment of our practice, we plant our rice field. We sink roots deep into our zazen, deep into our practice, deep into the breath, into mu, into this moment. This practice extends throughout all space and time. There are no limits. The moment we take our place on the mat and engage the practice, we put down roots of merit. We expand through all universes from the beginningless beginning to the endless end. All Buddhas throughout space and time. Or to turn it around, all moments are this moment. All places are this place. In that very realization, how can we not extend throughout all space and time? But now it's Yushan's turn. How can you save the beings of the three worlds in that way? A good question. Is our practice an escape? Do we hide away in our zazen just to avoid the tough questions and difficult situations that come up in our lives? Well, some do. If we limit our practice of zazen to the mat, this is a danger. The mat is not a hiding place. It's a springboard. What comes out of our zazen? How does it manifest itself? That extraordinary Lutheran pastor and martyr, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, wrote, "It is only by living completely in this world that one learns to have faith. One must completely abandon any attempt to make something of oneself, whether it be a saint, or a converted sinner, or a churchman, a so-called priestly type, a righteous man or an unrighteous one, a sick man or a healthy one. By this worldliness, I mean living unreservedly in life's duties, problems, successes and failures, experiences and perplexities." Yes. Live in this world completely, unreservedly, even as we sit our zazen completely, unreservedly. There is something strange, unknowable, even magical about this practice. We may think that sitting for a half hour a day or an hour a day is wasted time, or that practicing mindfulness on our everyday lives has no effect on anything. How can that change anything? And yet it does, profoundly. Every time we sit and face ourselves, face the bare emptiness of the mind, something changes. We are changed. And in meeting others, we change them. And like a pebble dropped into still water, the change ripples outward to affect the whole world and ultimately the universe. How do you save beings in this world of time, space, and karma? I recently had a conversation with a practitioner whose daughter, a school principal, was working 12-hour days to get ready for the fall term. One Friday, she went to her daughter's house, cleaned the whole place, and did all the laundry. In doing that, what did she give her daughter? A weekend. A weekend to see friends, play games with her family, go walking. A gift beyond price. And I'm willing to bet that when this woman's daughter went back to work on Monday, she was different from she would have been absent that gift. Ditsong takes one last shot. What do you call the three worlds? What are the three worlds in this moment? Can you bring forth a separate past and show it right now? Can you bring forth a separate future and show it right now? Can you bring forth even this present moment that is separate from past and future? Where is the essential mystery? Here it is! Yes. Here it is. What else is there outside this present moment? Beware of grandiose schemes to save the world. Practice now the Dharma. Plant your rice. Plant your practice. The roots of that practice extend throughout all time and all space, benefiting all beings. You don't have to worry about it. Together with all beings, we realize the way.